Welcome to Fusion, a show for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by Serenity Caldwell, my co-host on Query and managing editor at iMore, and Merlin Mann, co-host of Reconcilable Differences here on Relay and lots of other shows. Apparently there's shows that aren't on Relay, it's news to me. Due by Friday, Roddick on the Line, of course, Back to Work. And this month we're going to sit down and talk about the iPhone 10. Not the iPhone X, the 10. 10. I have it in parentheses because I don't trust my memory of this yet. So welcome. Welcome to Fusion. How is everybody?
I'm good.
Hello. Very good.
I'm still going to call it the iPhone X. I'm sorry.
So much cooler.
It is. Also, what are we going to call it in a year? This is what bothers me. What are we going to call the next iPhone 10? iPhone 10.2? Because yeah. I'm not okay with that.
There's lots of naming questions. So as we're recording this, the iPhone event was about a week ago. Like I said to you, Ren, when we were recording Query a couple minutes ago, it feels like it's been about a year. I can't believe it's only been a week, but I think it's just how it goes. So we're not going to talk about specs or any of that stuff. Other shows have covered that. I'm really curious what the two of you think about the phone. I think all three of us have carried an iPhone now for 10 years or close to it, which, again, is crazy making. But, kind of curious to what you guys think about this new direction. What about you, Merlin?
Oh, man. Don't start with me. I don't know quite what to think. I recorded a podcast this morning with a friend of mine, and I'm one of the people in his life who he says, do I need to buy this thing? And I said, I'm not sure. As I look at their product line, and I tried to be smart, and I went and read some of Serenity's articles, and I looked at the Apple website, and I think it's a very, very confusing time for the iPhone landscape. Because my short version on this is, yeah, it looks super interesting. The technology in it obviously looks amazing. But from a consumer standpoint, I'm asking myself, like, who this is for. The clear answer is Apple diehards who always want the latest, greatest, and most forward-looking device. And given that the 8, I know we're not talking about the 8 today, but with the 8 hanging out there and the 7s hanging out there and the 6s hanging out there, I'm trying to figure out who this is for that is not the Apple diehard that wants the latest and greatest. Because it feels like we're again in another one of those situations like we went through with the iPad and the laptop Max, where it's like, it's difficult to say that this is the one you should buy. And I mean, you know, this is obviously the way things are going. Apple has this way of telegraphing where they're going. Obviously, this represents the future for them. They're probably, I don't know how much of the stuff in this is a trial balloon, but one imagines Touch ID, I guess, is just going to go away. But I've been kind of racking my brain trying to figure out who you would recommend this for that's not just an ardent Apple fan with a fair amount of dough.
Yeah, I think that's very much where I am. So last Tuesday had the event. I worked all day. I went to a thing that evening with some friends of mine. And of course, you know, I'm sure the two of you have experienced this, you know, or like your friend earlier, Merlin, where like you're the person they ask questions of. And so I opened the door and that's the first question out of everybody's mouth. I was like, what phone should I get? Why is this one so expensive? Like the word I keep coming back to is that it's the enthusiast device. Like the people who, like you said, do want to be the latest and greatest, who, you know, are Apple fans, who have had every iPhone, who upgrade every year, you know, regardless of cost. And maybe that's enough. Maybe that's enough people to have this thing in existence now, as opposed to 2 years from now when the future will be then. But I feel very much the same way as you. What about you, Ren?
I actually feel completely differently about it in a weird way. So maybe I can try and uncouple my brain a bit.
I think that probably comes down to one giant difference between you versus Steven and me, which is you've used it, right?
Yeah, that's also true. That's true. I used it for about six minutes. So I six minutes in heaven. No. Okay. So I think to explain what interests me about the iPhone 10, I have to talk about the iPhone 8 a little bit. Especially because it is coming out in 2 days, 3 days, and people are kind of like, well, there's another iPhone coming 2 weeks from now. Like, what's going on? Like, what is this iPhone any good? Is it as good as the 7? And the funny thing is, they've actually put a lot of the iPhone X's technology in the iPhone 8. A lot of the stuff that they essentially had to end, like the Silicon team had to engineer for the iPhone X, like the neural engine, the Bionic chip, a lot of the features in the iPhone X would not work if it were not for the processor and the neural engine and the new GPU, but they still put it in the iPhone 8. And gave basically the iPhone 8 this supercharged processor and power. And that makes it, I think, in some ways, even harder for the average consumer to understand. Because they say, okay, here is a device that doesn't look like the iPhone 10, but internally has quite a lot of the same features. It has the same, you know, the same processor. The camera, especially on the Plus model, is very similar, although not identical. And there's a lot of similarities here. So what am I actually getting for those, you know? And if you compare the 8 Plus versus the 10, what am I really getting between those two models, right? What's the big jumping off point? And there, like, therein kind of lies the special part of the 10. And it's not the fact that it's an OLED screen, although that's nice, and it's not the fact that it's edge-to-edge and gets rid of Touch ID. It's all of the technology that they've built in for Face ID and what they've done to the rear cameras. The fact that they've essentially made a device that's, you know, not slightly bigger than the iPhone 8, but smaller than the Plus, that has the same camera system as the Plus, in addition to fixing the telephoto lens so that it is actually as, not necessarily as good as the wide angle, but significantly better. They've dropped the telephoto lens from f2.8 to f2.4, which is a huge, huge jump in the level of low light quality that you're going to get from telephoto, aka what most people know as portrait lenses, the portrait lens architecture and the portrait lens system. So now, instead of just taking a portrait lens photo or a portrait photo like you could on the iPhone 7, and you still will be on the iPhone 8, you can now take a portrait photo in low light and have the same processing and arguably better processing than the 7 because of all of the internal infrastructure I mentioned earlier. And that, combined with the internal infrastructure powering portrait lighting, adds a whole new dimension of low light and dimensional photography to the rear camera. So for photographers who are looking for like a huge jump to the faux DSLR landscape, the iPhone 10 has it in a way that the iPhone 8 just doesn't. The iPhone 8 has the better ISP, which means that motion's going to be a lot better, sure, and it's going to have a lot faster portrait rendering. But like, in terms of, if you care about shooting low light photos, if you care about like that space, you're essentially not buying so much a smartphone as you are a really advanced version of a digital connected camera. It's not at the level of like a Sony A7 or a DSLR, but it's getting really close in a really creepy way. And then to augment that, and this is the thing where I think we're going to see a lot of iPhone X sold as soon as the photos start coming out, is I think the people who can afford it, namely the Instagram influencers, the Snapchat people, are going to drive adoption of this phone because the front-facing camera is some of the most freakishly good wizardry I've ever seen out of front-facing photos. And that sounds ridiculous to most of the tech crowd because they're like, okay, it's a really good selfie camera. Like, why the heck do I care about this? But the technology inherent in the Face ID sensor means that you now have the ability for a full, proper, calculated and ever-evolving depth map for not only the camera app, but for any third-party apps that want to use and use and implement that information. So you get apps like Snapchat, which is demonstrated on screen, basically having 3D, you know, fully movable map masks, and you can have background mapping, basically green screen on anything magically. Combined with the fact that you have the camera app basically demoing portrait lighting on front-facing selfies, and you see this technology looks so much better than it does with the rear-facing camera because you have the actual depth map. Once you see a couple of those photos, and we got a chance to take a couple of them, the selfie seems silly to the majority of the tech audience, but the second that gets out into the general quote-unquote influencer sphere, it is going to drive a lot of these phones, like a scary, scary amount of these phones, because people like stuff like that. They really enjoy it, and especially if they have the money for it, they're going to go gaga. It doesn't matter if they're Apple fans or not. This technology is unlike anybody else's, and if I want to have the best YouTube, Instagram, etc., I'm going to want this phone.
That's well put. One thing I find myself saying sometimes after one of these, now that I'm an old man and I complain about things more, is, isn't it a bummer that there's this thing that it feels like they could have put into this other device but for whatever reason they didn't. And then we wonder, is that because they want to differentiate? Is that because they're going to have a limited number of the sensors for Touch ID? I mean, I, like everybody, I guess, I was skeptical about Touch ID, and now I really like it. So I kind of can't imagine not having it when I have to turn on my daughter's iPod. I feel like a savage. But I mean, really, one thing to their credit, and I'm glad that they put so much stuff into both of these that not only creates this new kind of device with the 10, but is, you know, I lost a lot of this in the lights. I had to go back and reread a lot of this to realize how much of the stuff from the 10 would be benefiting the 8 as well. So, I mean, first of all, kudos to Apple for doing that. The other part, though, and I don't mean to make this just about the mercantile angle of recommendations. The other thing is that gets confusing is the price difference. So you can, there's something like a $200 difference between from one point of view. Is that right? Like a $200 difference between the 8 and the 10. But then you start, you know, rolling out all the asterisks on capacity and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it's funny because, like, this is not my usual, you know, pissing and moaning, I don't think. And I'm not even really complaining. It's more like I'm just trying to kind of figure it out. And for myself, as a very happy 7 Plus user, like, what would I do? But I think it's really encouraging that there's so much technology in this stuff. And I still think it's not too, I think we can still repeat something that is worth repeating, which is that a company that putting out hardware is almost always a good sign. We get worried with Apple when they're not putting out as much and when there is radio silence. So in that sense, like, I'm very happy. I don't have anything really too bad to say about any of this stuff. I'm really glad that they're moving this stuff forward. It's just more like, from that point of view of being the friend who you get advice from, you know, your friend's mom who needs to replace an iPhone 5, like, what do you recommend? Well, I didn't recommend the 10.
No.
I honestly said, you know, it's a lot of dough, but then it's only a little bit more dough. Like, I'm happy with my 7. Should she get an 8? That's the mainly the way it's interesting is, like, how much they've decided to keep all these other things. And I guess maybe that makes a bigger umbrella. But
yeah,
you know, I'm optimistic about all this. I think it's really good. I continue to be most excited about I know this is out of scope for this visit, but I'm still most excited about the watch just for my own personal reasons.
Me
too. I think
too.
That was the most. Yeah, that's the most, like, you know, year over year, tech over tech thing where you kind of, like, you're agog. Like, you know, this feels like the future. But I didn't think the event was that great while I was watching it, but after I had a little bit more time to digest it, I thought that it was really fast. They obviously had a lot to get through. I thought there was a little more cheese than we probably needed. But I mean, the announcement that they made, these sound like really solid products.
Yeah. The way that I've been breaking it down to explain it to the average folks is essentially, like, if you're upgrading from, let's just say, old device, you're upgrading from an iPhone 5 or earlier and you need a new thing. If you want a solid phone and you don't want to pay a lot of money, you've got the 7 line. If you want a phone that's going to be really freaking fast, then you want the 8 line. If you want a phone that's going to be really freaking fast and also have some really great camera features, but you don't have the budget to really go all out, you want the 8 Plus. And if you want the top tier camera features that you seriously cannot get on another phone and probably won't be able to for at least another year, if not two, the more I learn about the Face ID architecture system, Face ID is really the least interesting part of it to me, where all of the stuff that they've gone into making Face ID work has had the offset benefit of completely revolutionizing how Apple is doing digital cameras on the phones. And I'm going to be really curious to see how long it takes competitors to try and ape that system or figure out a different way of doing it. Because the way that they've tied the GPU, the CPU, the ISP, and the new Face ID camera system, or True Depth camera system together is crazy. The thing that I am most excited about, honestly, these announcements all this year are great. The iPhone X, as I said, it's going to be great for people who want to play with the next generation of camera technology. But what I'm really excited about is when the True Depth camera system gets cheap enough that they can stick it on the rear phone. Because the difference in depth perception, as well as the difference that is going to make in AR and everything else that Apple is experimenting with, is going to be monumental when we bring it to the rear camera. Like, really freaking scary, you know, building Star Wars worlds in your backyard kind of scary. And the amount of just, I cannot overstate the amount of work that they've done in the True Depth sensor. And it's like, I have probably 3,000 words worth of stuff bouncing around my brain about how this is going to change camera technology. For everybody, not just smartphone manufacturers, but like for Micro Four Thirds manufacturers and everybody else in the digital camera space, like this has the potential to do a lot of crazy shit for Previz alone. Holy crow! Like Previz and FX Studios are going to have a field day with this technology when it gets more rolled out. So like that's the thing I think I'm most excited about, is not just the existing products. The existing products are cool. The potential for what people can do, like how people are going to use software with this stuff, and where Apple's going to take the hardware in a few years, like that's what gets me really, really pumped. This is like, they're not kidding when they're like, this is the next 10 years of iPhone. Not because it has an edge-to-edge screen. The edge-to-edge screen is a side effect of implementing this camera system. Like the edge, who cares about the edge-to-edge screen aside from the fact that it's more space? It's the technology. Like the technology itself is going to change it.
I liked what you said a second ago about Face ID kind of being the least interesting thing, and that's a very Apple-like move to have implement technology in the Mac or the iPad or wherever, and have it for like the big headlining feature. But then also say, hey, because we have all this stuff, we came up with these like creative ways or like additional ways it would be helpful. So like, hey, we added FireWire to the Mac so you can plug in your DV camera and like import your movies into iMovie. But that led to the iSight camera, and that led to, this is a nerdy example, but like FireWire Target Disk Mode, which made being a Mac admin much easier. They put this thing here for like a reason. And then once it's there, once they're in process, they come up with all these other reasons that it could be beneficial and even like a creative tool. And like that's one of my favorite things about their hardware, that they don't just put a feature in and say, you can only use this for this thing that we say you can use it for, like that they do slowly roll it out. And things like the depth map will be available to, you know, through the API so developers can use it. And we're going to see like this whole new set of tools and set of apps come out of this, because Apple said, hey, we're going to use this for Face ID, but we're also going to use it for all these other things. And hey, you can use it too. And I think that's sometimes frustrating to see how slow they can be with that. But once they start to open that door, then we get all sorts of extra goodies that weren't there on day one. And I think it makes the value of the product and owning the product go up over time as you can do more things with it as sort of more people get on board.
So, I mean, it sounds like, to turn this into, put it slightly differently, if you've got the dough and you like having the latest, greatest, and you're feeling like you're not so much of an old man that you won't be able to handle not having a button anymore. From one point of view, it sounds like kind of a no-brainer. They're like, if you've got the dough and you want it, you should get it. You know, the worst part of it is, and this seems so silly, like when it's been a few months later, but yeah, you got to wait a few weeks to get it. But one other question about, okay, so I've been running iOS 11 on one of my iPads for several weeks, and then I went on the developer beta, and then I got the public beta on another one of my iPad. They're two different iPad Pros because I'm a fancy lad. And I there's still a lot that I'm kind of getting used to in terms of the swipe up to get to the control panel. Still feels a little bit janky. Some of that stuff feels a little bit weird. What do you all make of what feels like, starting with this iPhone X? You know, the rap for so long was, you remember the old jokes about how, oh, the iPad's just a big iPhone. Well, in some ways, it really kind of was. But then they introduced the stuff like now you're seeing the drag and drop, the side-by-side, et cetera. What do you think it portends that swiping up from the bottom of the screen means something different on the two devices? Is that meaningful?
You know, I don't know if it is so different on the two devices. Because when you're talking about the swipe up to unlock is a little bit different, obviously, than the current process to unlock on the iPad. But once you're in it, swiping mm-hmm. up works almost identically to the iPad, right? The only thing that they've really moved is they move control center is a right edge swipe down as opposed to an extenuation of the multitasking screen. But the iPhone X, when it's unlocked, swiping up from the bottom will actually get you to the same kind of multitasking screen that you see in the iPad Pro. I think they're trying to build the same general feel. It's just not, it has to be slightly different for each device.
I'm looking at it backwards, yeah. I guess. Instead of thinking of it as, you know, if we take Apple for what they normally would do, like we're seeing the leading edge of something that'll, you know, spin out over the next 5 years, that's gonna be buttonless and Face ID. So really, kind of, I'm the dinosaur here. In thinking that that's strange, because like everybody says, once you use it, and once you use the flicking across the bottom of the screen to get around, it feels very. I think you said as much in one of your iMore articles. It feels natural very quickly. Is that right?
Yeah, it feels. Do you ever carry around like a reporter style moleskin? It kind of feels like mm-hmm. that, where you flick your thumb to flip open the book. It feels very very similar kind of gesture, wow. And it's, yeah, I'm honestly now when I finally get an iPhone 10, now I just want to put a moleskin lock screen on it just to have that feeling.
the path the iPhone and iPad on were the same, and they're slowly growing apart. And like the gestures are the same to a degree, but until they do different things. And maybe the iPad's in limbo because it still has a home button, but if it didn't, can we assume it would work the same way as the new iPhone? Like there's always. Because their cycles are off, because the iPad is always a little behind the iPhone in this stuff, and maybe even more so now that this is like the future iPhone, but you can get it today if you have the money. Maybe the iPad will catch up. I think for me, that's sort of a footnote to the bigger picture that the iPad has this new multitasking system that just isn't on the iPhone, right? That before, they would never give the iPad something mm-hmm. the iPhone couldn't or wouldn't do. And we saw a little bit of that was iOS 9 with slide over and stuff, which now if you go back to feels like a baby's toy.
Oh my God.
So that's what's exciting to me about the iPad is that they are breaking the links between them. And yeah, there's always going to be overlap in the UI and sort of the modality of it, but that they are thinking about the iPad as something different from the phone really for the first time in a big way. That's exciting to me as someone who wants, like I want to be able to use my iPad more. I want it to be able to do more things. And I've always felt really frustrated and hamstrung by it. And that is changing in iOS 11 ever so slowly. And I think that's good for the product. I think it's good for the users.
Yeah. And it's all, I think what's most exciting is that it's all continually being based around the same basic gestures that we're already comfortable with. And that's where what's kind of moving forward with the iPhone X is really smart, is that they've already introduced these kinds of, you know, using the flicking from the bottom of the screen to do certain things on the iPad. And it's basically saying, hey, if you already have an iPad Pro, you kind of know this gesture already. If you have an Apple Watch, you already know what the dock looks like, right? The new multitasking screen. Like all of these UI interfaces and swipes, they all feel very similar to each other, but they're distinctly different. Like, you made a perfect point there, Stephen, in that, like, Apple is really embracing, in a way that I don't think they could in the first few versions of iOS, right? Where iOS was still growing as a system, the engineers were still kind of figuring out how it lived and how it needed to best exist on an iPhone. And now it's at a mature enough point where both the engineers and the hardware the folks in charge of hardware can really say, okay, well, we've got the backbone of this system. We know what the gestures are. We know how to integrate them. Now let's figure out what makes the most sense for each device and just kill it. You know, just make the absolute best interface that we can for each. They're treating each device like it's a Mac and an iPhone now, where they're just saying, hey, we have all of this, we have this shared infrastructure, but we don't have to make things that look identical.
I think that's smart for a variety of reasons. The other thing that I'm kind of banging around in my head is that it feels like, I mean, just walking around, you can see a lot of what we're talking about in this program, where you will see, certainly at least in San Francisco, you'll see a lot of people with the latest and greatest. Candidly, a lot of the people who are doing like gig economy deliveries, they've got an iPhone 4 or 5 with a broken screen. You're riding on Muni. There's a lot of people with an iPad mini that their kids are watching videos on. You know, Apple becomes its own, not enemy precisely, but something like an iPad is the sort of thing that a lot of folks bought as a media viewer. Whereas now, I guess people are buying more, I don't know what, Amazon tablets? I don't know. But, you know, you have to really demonstrate that this is something that can be much more than the thing that you bought it for. And I feel like they're doing a good job with that. And part of that, it feels like, just to repeat what you said, part of that is differentiating. That, like, we are going to do on the iPhone, you're going to do stuff that's really good to do on an iPhone. And we'll push that a little bit. And then on the iPad, here's the stuff that's really good to do on an iPad. And we'll push that a little bit. We're not going to push it too far. But like, it's going to continue to be something where the Stevens of the world are still going to want an iMac or a whatever for doing most stuff. I happen to like that. I love my iMac. I would never want to give this thing up. But I think it's a positive sign for the company that they're willing to even perhaps quietly say, well, these are going to have different capabilities and different functionalities because they need to be different. As more people become like the Federicos and the Frasers of the world and really try to do some serious work, or Mike for that matter, try to do some really serious stuff on this, you don't want to be too cleft to this idea that it's just a big iPhone. That's not good for anybody.
Yeah, and to go off your point, Merlin, about, you know, people using older devices, this is one thing where Apple software really is king, because they support older devices for so long, and even when your device mm-hmm. can't update to the latest version, still pushing security patches for older devices. Like, it allows people to get used to certain movements and certain controls on their iPhone before they ever get a chance to actually use something like an iPhone X, right? The training, getting us used to flicking and getting us used to swiping, is something that's 10 years in the making. You know, getting us used to interacting more with a screen than we do with a button. It's all over the genes of this thing. And people still using an iPhone 4S. I mean, hell, look at, I think about the 4S and the 5 that had the home button breakage problem, and how many people I used to see who had implemented the accessibility setting to use guided access.
That's really, I see that a lot.
Yeah. So you're by way of that, Apple is in a weird way training them for the iPhone X.
The other funny thing is, and this is a toy's told tale at this point, but, you know, I brush my daughter's hair every morning to distract her. She's usually like looking at my MacBook Adorable, maybe looking at life hack videos or something. God save me. But and probably twice or three times a week, I let out a shriek because she does what? Because she clicks on the menu bar to go to the top of the page on the screen of the MacBook Adorable. Or she, it just makes me shudder. She tries to swipe across the screen of the laptop. And you know what? I've done it too. I've done it a ton of times where I'm tempted to just, not so much on the desktop, but on a laptop, I am very tempted to do that because there are certain kinds of things that just make so much more sense. Could you ever imagine that there could be something more efficient than the home key on an extended keyboard? Well, there is. It's clicking on the time. And when you click on the time, excluding Google, which breaks everything, you will get all kinds of great stuff that happens. I've just recently started using the iPad more with a Logitech Bluetooth keyboard. I can't believe how far that stuff has come. I can't believe for folks who haven't done this much, if you've got a recent iPad, and especially with iOS 11, hook that up and then just hit the command key and a little bezel pops up on screen and tells you all the stuff you can do. And in some apps, it's mind-boggling. It's amazing how far that stuff has come.
Yeah, I am. The amount that you can do with keyboard shortcuts, not just in individual apps, but across the system too, the fact that you can use Command Spacebar to pull down Spotlight, and then you never have to use the home screen again, because you essentially just use Command Tab and Command Spacebar, and you can navigate to anything.
That took me about 10 minutes to get used to this week. But here, what you're describing, I did not even realize this was a thing, because I would keep thinking like I was using a touch interface where, again, now I'm using a Logitech keyboard. I got an iPad Pro up and I'm thinking, okay, now I'm clicking. I need to go to the home screen. I need to pull down. But what you're describing on the face of it, yes, very clever. You hit Command Space and it takes you straight to the Spotlight search. That's pretty cool. What I didn't realize until this week is it'll also, I was getting sick of arrowing down through the five suggestions it made. You go in, you hit Command Space, type TWEET, and enter, and it's going to open Tweetbot directly.
Yeah.
You don't even need to select it. It'll do the first match for you out of the apps on there and will open it for you. And I was blown. I had no problem using this like a little computer for a couple hours, and it worked a treat. It was amazing.
The iPad Pro has come a long, long way. And the fact that the thing that I really like about it, and yeah, we're going completely off topic. Sorry, Stephen.
It's an ecosystem.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that the ecosystem has built in such a way that it's very friendly to be used in a hybrid form, where you can use it as a keyboard, but you can very quickly collapse that keyboard behind your screen, and then all of a sudden you're in a full touch interface. Or you can use both. You can use the touch interface and the keyboard interface. And going back to the iPhone X here, you know, the iPhone X, granted, is not something that is as nice to use with a keyboard infrastructure as the iPad Pro, but it's still a capable enough device that you can hook it up to your AirPods, you can hook it up to a Bluetooth keyboard, you can go basically however your new Apple Watch and interact with it any way you will. You can use AirDrop to interact between your iPhone X and or your iPhone 6 for that matter. You know, the Apple has built all of these technologies to be interconnected and to work with the existing world. The fact that, you know, you can use Command Tab on your iPad Pro, and you knew that you could use Command Tab because it's something that you've been doing subconsciously on your Mac for decades.
Will you talk me off the ledge about one thing?
Yeah.
We probably can't get into the notch. I'm sure I would get used to it. Talk me off the ledge about getting to Control Center with the 10.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
Really?
Yeah.
It seems so far away.
I have such little toddler hands.
So the thing to remember, what phone do you use right now, Merlin? Is it an SE or a 6 or a 7 or
iPhone 7 Plus?
All right. So you've got the 7 Plus. So the thing that I would recommend, do you have a case on it right now? Or do you have it?
Yes.
Freehand. Okay. So I have like a big obnoxious case, so I'm just going to pop mine out.
I've got the leather case.
Yeah. So even with your quote-unquote tiny toddler hands, put your hands directly in the middle of the iPhone 7 Plus, like you're holding the middle of the screen, and then just reach your thumb over to the opposite end of the bezel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you reach,
I have to kind of squeeze it toward me a little bit, but I can get over there.
Yeah.
There's my notifications. All right.
See, I think
I can do it.
Yeah. On the Plus, I'm so used to, when I use it one-handed, I'm so used to like doing the pinky stand where you like stick your pinky finger underneath the home button and then you stretch. It's a little bit different. And yeah, there are people who are like, why is reachability not on the 10? It's going to ruin everything. But when I actually...
Well, here's the question. Yeah. And this is, I'm sure there's a super obvious thing I'm missing because that's kind of what I'm good at. But it's my understanding that if you pull down from the top on the 10, if you pull down on the left side of the notch, one kind of thing happens. You pull down on the right side of the notch, another kind of thing happens, right? So on the one hand, you get notifications if you're on the left side. You get Control Center if you're on the right side. Is that correct?
You get, I would say you get notifications kind of left to center. So that's kind of center notch will just pull down the lock screen and Control Center and Notification Center and all of the goodies that live in there. But yeah, the top right is Control Center. Yeah.
I guess
I wish
they would do that same thing at the bottom. Give me the lower left 2/3 for app switching. Give me the lower right 1/3 for getting to control center.
Just or just let me swipe from the left. Much. Let me swipe from the left.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Or put it in multitasking where it is on the iPad, right? That you're already used to it being there. And there was something floating around months ago. That's what they were going to do. And, you know, they could always change it. My concern, similar to Merlin's, that seems like a really long way away. But going from a plus to the new phone, the other thing I'm a little nervous about, and we need to probably wrap this up after this, is the screen is only as wide as the 6 and 7. So the keyboard is going to be more narrow than what I've gotten used to over 3 years. And I'm a little curious about how that's going to play out, because I really like the Plus. I really like the keyboard on the Plus. It's one of the main reasons that I keep buying these giant phones that, you know, if you're out in the wind and your arm is out, it could carry you away. Because that keyboard's really good, that wide. And I'm curious how that's going to play out. I haven't used a 4.7-inch phone since the 6 came out. I haven't picked one up, I don't think, hardly at all. And I'm a little nervous about that.
They feel so little. My daughter's iPod, my daughter's iPod Touch, it feels it's almost like using the watch. It's so little. I feel like I really have to articulate where each little click goes.
I wonder also, this is something I didn't really test out with the iPhone X when I had it in my hands, but I wonder if the landscape keyboard is better. Because I'm not a huge fan of using it on the Plus right now, but I wonder if it's gotten better and more comfortable.
On the X?
Yeah.
That's going to be rough, because there is not a lot of, in port or in landscape mode, you do not have a lot.
That's true. There's not a lot of, you don't have a lot of vertical space.
No.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question. And I don't know if I have a good answer for it beyond we're going to have to see. And also, maybe Apple just wants you to dictate everything with AirPods.
There you go. Just talk to it all the time. You're the voice guy, Merlin. Just talk to it.
I'm the voice guy. I know you got to go. I'd love to talk about this stuff for another hour. I mean, like Steve Trout and Smith. I mean, to me, it's all the little stuff. There's so much little stuff. Have me on again to talk about little stuff. But like the Steve Trout and Smith discovered that now you can control your AirPods volume, not in Overcast, only in music, but in now playing music, you can control your volume with the digital crown on your watch.
Oh my God. That's been there forever, but now it's in watchOS 4 for other things. You can do it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's been there for a long time. My favorite thing, by the way, is if you have your iPhone paired to your car, the volume control on your watch will work to control your car.
Oh, that's black magic.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Too many smarts, maybe. We maybe have crossed a line here. Everything's talking to everybody.
All the smarts, Stephen. All the smarts.
Cut us off, Stephen. We're running long. Cut us off.
We'll just talk forever. We haven't even gotten to watch.
Yeah. Well, thank you both for joining me. There's plenty more time to think about this, because this phone doesn't go on pre-order until when? October 27th? Is that right, Ren?
Yeah. A couple days before my wedding. It'll be great.
Yes. So I'll be up in the middle of the night ordering a phone like some sort of craven animal.
I'll be up in the middle of the night, you know, making wedding things.
Yeah.
So it'll be great. You'll go from... I won't sleep anyway.
You're going to be up anyway calming your relatives' nerves. You might as well buy a phone.
That's good advice.
True.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you, Relay FM members, for your support. If you're not a Relay FM member and you're hearing my voice right now, it's okay. We still love you. You are forgiven, but you should learn about our membership, relay.fm/membership. We love your support. So until next month, adios.